PS with Mike Kelly, Friday, August 11th, following our longer amazing session last week.
I really appreciated this podcast. It made me realize something I think is very important for me to realize. So as I often do, I've written out to help me think it through. And I think the easiest thing, I'd like to read it. It's quite short. And then we can chat.
Sure.
Okay, so in the Wachowski's 1999 movie, The Matrix, the hero Neo is offered two choices in the form of pills, blue and red. The blue pill will return him to a familiar but emotionally impoverished existence, scripted by hidden, self-serving artificial intelligences. Despite its lonely, dystopian superficiality, that life's self-centered, zero-sum transactionalism is attractively self-consistent, intellectually challenging in the way a video game is, and predictable. Alternatively, the red pill offers transformation. If taken, the hero is reborn in a reality where chance and choice are not scripted. Relationships are meaningful and emotionally satisfying, and membership in a conscious community replaces self-centered isolation. AI presents humanity with a similar all-hands-on-deck dilemma. Its accelerating proliferation requires that we choose a pill. For us, the red pill is facing that artificial intelligence can destroy humanity, but only with our participation. It demands that we collectively face who we are, decide who we intend to become, and apply artificial intelligence accordingly. Believing we can harness artificial intelligence to our intentions, just as we have other technologies, capabilities, or products, is our blue pill. It's the vote for business as usual. However, that requires embracing or ignoring AI's destabilizing impact on social harmony. Presumably, those who choose blue imagine they will rise from the ashes to dominate the ruins left by worldwide panic as billions of people react chaotically to catastrophic, climactic, economic, social, and political disruption. Humanity's bias toward optimism is potent. So most people choosing or acquiescing to blue is entirely possible. History's roller coaster of emerging and collapsing civilizations suggests that is a likely outcome. Those submitting will feel blanketed by a numbing sense of inevitability. Those promoting the wave of chaos will double down on their game of economic musical chairs while building castles in remote places on Mars, if they can get there. If humanity takes the blue pill, the outcome is predictably unfortunate. The universe is lethally indifferent toward life. So an extinction event will eventually overwhelm us. We are already an extinction event for many species, including ourselves potentially. Ironically, our technological facility provides life's only protection against some of the worst possibilities. For instance, deflecting asteroids like the one that destroyed the dinosaurs. However, we have used so much of the planet's readily accessible resources in building our current technologically advanced civilization that when it collapses, it is unlikely that our descendants will be able to rebuild it. Of course, there's the red pill alternative, transformation. Unfortunately, transformation is a hard choice. In The Matrix, Neo almost dies during the process. As necessary or attractive as starting fresh may be, it feels dangerous. Things have to come apart before you can reconfigure them. So the issue of dying to be reborn is psychologically and literally real. Even people who hate their lives find change forbidding. And those who think themselves fortunate are actively hostile toward it. Nevertheless, artificial intelligence is the first technology that makes species-scale transformation feasible. A version of it, artificial general intelligence, AGI, with a mind of its own, can be the red pill that offers humanity an exit from the roller coaster of doom into a paradise of wonder and fulfillment. But nature did not wire us to live in paradise. Very much otherwise. While we can thrive there, nature designed us to survive in hell. Unfortunately, the instincts that make both possible produce contradictions. While nature was able to evolve cooperation because it is far more productive than competition, it had to retain self-protective fear and aggression. We can only red pill our way out of those contradictions because we can choose which side of our nature we bring to our circumstances. We respond to context more flexibly than any other creature. However, we naturally default to me when we feel frightened. Nevertheless, we can respond cooperatively and equitably instead of reacting naturally. Our conscious appreciation of we is the foundation of civilized society. This is why most of Amaranthine, How to Create a Regenerative Civilization Using Artificial Intelligence, is a procedural manual for creating and sustaining paradise. It is procedural because it must be programmable to create a red pill. It is designed for us because our red pill must offer us a life of wonder and delight. Otherwise, it would recreate a psychologically faithful experience of living in tiny bands on the plains of Africa hundreds of thousands of years ago when we were near the top of the menu. Pretty much like what happens in The Matrix and how most people struggle today with corrupt governments, predatory corporations, and grifters instead of lions, tigers, and bears. Blue pill AI puts weight on the me side of social relations, undermining civility. Red pill AGI reinforces we, the bedrock of civilization. Unfortunately, the blue pill is dominant, and the red pill remains notional. The good news is that we can act to reverse that simply by reading a book and promoting the post-scarcity society it makes possible. I wrote that to address what I realized talking with people the other day, was that my book's a red pill. I'd never thought of it as a red pill. To me, it was just a manual for creating paradise. It just didn't occur to me that paradise could be, that could be a pretty scary thing. So I hope this would make it really, really clear we're facing an existential moment.
Yeah, for the species, for sure. You said just a couple of things here. I just made a few notes. The universe is lethally what?
Hostile to the living things. You know, life can't live in most of the universe. In fact, as far as we know at the moment, this planet is the only place where life exists. Now, I think that's absurd, you know, that we would be the only place that life exists. But most of the planets, most of the places you look at in the universe, certainly our kind of life couldn't survive there.
Okay, but doesn't that make you curious about why we're here? That there might be a purpose beyond just surviving, that we might be placed here for a reason?
Well, not really. It did when I was younger. In fact, I would say probably for at least half of my life, say the first 30 years or so, certainly, for sure, less so after that. You know, to write the book, I had to cross so many facets of the human experience, from ethics and theology to psychology, anthropology, physics, chemistry. I mean, when I said before that I no longer feel like I'm an expert at anything, it's because I just had to, in following all of these tracks, to make sense of my experience and my understanding of history and human nature, I saw consistent patterns. And you can see human beings, nature gave us certain attributes that are essential for existence. An organism that doesn't distinguish itself from what isn't itself, that doesn't know when to approach and when to avoid, that can't prioritize, that can't distinguish between what to incorporate and what to spit out because it's bitter and dangerous. There's that minimum subset of things. If you're going to be an organism, if you're going to not immediately go extinct the moment you evolve, you have to be able to master that minimum set of things. And there are consequences to that. And as life wrestled with the contradictions in that, it stumbled on cooperation, you know, the bees, the ants, all those sorts of things. And it turns out cooperation is a very unique approach. I mean, it's a fundamental change in how you define self and other. So it's not a whole new class, but it's a profound restructuring of identity. And the reason it works is because it creates the possibility of cooperation. And cooperation is thermodynamically just incredibly more productive and efficient than competition. It just aces. I mean, there's a reason the two dominant species on the planet, the Argentine ant and humanity.
Wow. What a juxtaposition.
Yeah, really, isn't it? We are the only two species that dominate our environments on every continent on the planet except Antarctica. The only two. And there's a reason for that. And that's because cooperation is just so much more efficient. Do you know that they recently discovered, oh gosh, I think it was 200 million interconnected termite mounds covering an area the size of Great Britain?
Where?
I think it's in Brazil.
Wow.
And they figure that it's about 4,000 years old. So here you've got a termite civilization older than any human civilization has ever been, you know. So we're amateurs at this game. But we have advantages over even the ants and the bees, generally speaking. The point I'm trying to get to in response to what you were asking is that there are certain patterns of behavior that recur and recur and recur. You know, nature has a problem and it will solve it the same way over and over and over again. And human civilizations, human societies confronting a reality in which they are best served when they cooperate, but must retain the ability to defend themselves against the lions and tigers and bears, do so in patterns, in ways that are consistent. You know, as names and places change, the pattern doesn't change, the process doesn't change. And creating religion is one of the things that's made us able to become the world-spanning creature that we are. It's a way that we attempt to solve the tension between me and us, me and we. And it's never quite sufficient. It just simply has never been sufficient. And that's what I had to confront in creating the AI. You know, it's not as though humanity doesn't know what works. Every time we crash a civilization, a new one emerges. You know, I mean, we know what works. There are just some of us who always cheat.
Well, and hopefully more of us who honor the process of possibility.
Well, see, here's the problem, is that we are so unconscious, naturally unconscious of the me and the we. I mean, a human being can go from road rage to volunteering at the local soup kitchen in 20 minutes and not experience any discontinuity. You know, we had to be that way to survive on the plains of Africa 200,000 years ago, you know?
We're in a lull of luxury at the moment. There's a lot more going on. There was a couple things I just wanted to follow up on with you is the word agency. What does that mean exactly to you?
Yeah, agency is a technical term in economics. It just simply means that you have the capacity to make something happen. You can be an agent.
I like the word. It's like a detective agency. You make something happen.
Yeah, it's a neat word, isn't it? That's kind of why I use it in spite of the fact of it being technical.
Yeah. Okay. And then we had talked last time about AGI, and you just referred to it again, being artificial general intelligence that has a mind of its own, which is concerning. And then AI, which is your basic, just programmed and ready to go artificial intelligence. Now, something that came to my attention this week, which a lot of people are familiar with, generative artificial intelligence, and that's generating words, audio, visuals, voice.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that's AI that is programmed to manipulate words or images. It's still just a form of translation. Embedded, implicit in it is, it's still a blue pill because it doesn't have any awareness, any sapience, any consciousness, any ability to say, well, this makes sense or doesn't make sense. And the only sort of context it has is embedded in what we teach it. So it's just a mirror for our nature, good and bad.
Right, which is the situation. Well, okay, so just briefly, some samples of artificial intelligence are like Grammarly, that offers feedback on from all the style guides as you're writing something in there.
I use it all the time.
I use it a lot too. And it's amping up though because of ChatGPT, right? Like it's wanting to stay in the game and not just be a little assistant. It wants to lead the game.
But it will not think thoughts that haven't been thought by human beings.
Right.
And it's not going to have any agency outside of the agency that's given to it, you know, to offer suggestions to, you know, it's not going to say, Michael, you just wrote hogwash.
It's going to say even a knowledgeable audience might not know what hogwash is.
Yeah, exactly. Don't you love it? I just love it.
If you disagree too many times, it gives you a survey. Why did you disagree? Why did you reject that? This.
I know. This is where the blue pill AI, as it's being developed now, becomes at best a tyranny of legalism. At best. It's going to say, well, everybody else sees the world this way. Why don't you? And it's only a slight remove from that to, we're going to punish you for not seeing the world that way. I mean, this is what you're getting in China right now. This is already happening.
Well, it's already been happening there for a while, and it's spreading like a wildfire. It's a concern because everybody's in this illusion that we're all free and private, and we've welcomed it all in with our phones and internet. We've welcomed it. Nobody's forcing it. We've opened the door.
I have never used and will never use chat, GPT, whatever, but it still won't save me from being transparent. You know, maybe I buy myself a little time, but it's a dictator's wet dream.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is why I want people to help me build the red pill, because we will not succeed. We cannot compete with AI. AI can compete with AI. An AGI absolutely could run rings around AI. Already it outbluffs us. It beats us in our own games. In the book, I talk about a couple of economists who built AI agents to do their economic trading for them. And the AI agents conspired to cheat the economists.
Oh, well, that's opening up so much. Okay, so to wrap up here, Mike.
Sure.
You've said this today and last week about help me to build this red pill AI. So we've got lots of ideas of how the current AI is, some ideas of how it's being programmed and applied and misused, not for our benefit. So I just want to get more of an idea of what it means to help you build this AI and what that would look like. What's involved?
That's perfectly reasonable. In writing the book, I'm not a programmer. I mean, I have designed software and had programmers write it for me, but I'm not a programmer. Nevertheless, it's not an unfamiliar world to me. And as I was writing the book, I made sure that I was not asking for a miracle. In other words, I could point to programs that already did aspects of what I needed for a red pill. Even so, it's going to take millions and millions of dollars to write this kind of thing. My plan remains to sell enough books to get that process rolling. I got to prime the pump. And moreover, I want as broad participation as possible. Look, I could go and raise, you know, I've, you know, one of my startups won the top 100 tech companies award, the Red Herring Award in 2019. I could go to Silicon Valley and raise $1 billion. And guess who would control it?
Right.
You know, I mean, if it comes to that as a last desperate measure, maybe I'll try that. But that's not how I want to do this. You know, I don't care whether people ever read the book or not. I see the book as a vote. You know, I want people to vote for a red pill. And the way they vote for the red pill is by buying the book, whether or not they ever read it. Now, they will get a lot out of reading that book. They will see the world profoundly differently and have choices that they never imagined having if they read that book. They can also have all of that by getting the red pill built. And in fact, I think the red pill is absolutely essential. I mean, I think if every single human being read the book it would not be enough to create a regenerative civilization. I think we need a helper, you know, not a dictator, but somebody who just constantly reminds us that we don't have to compete to get what we want. We can get what we want easier and faster and more of it by cooperating. But there are always going to be circumstances in every person's life when you're afraid and you feel like your only option is to lash out or to dominate, control, manipulate. And, you know, we need an angel on our shoulder, so to speak, to say, well, there's another way.
Yeah, I don't see it as AI or not AI. I agree that we're at definitely a turning point, and it's more important than ever to stay positive. I totally feel that way. It's more important than ever. You know, I don't think we can indulge in doubt and, you know, low self-worth and worry. Like you say, it's a time of all hands on deck. And if we can be mindful of how we're involved with AI, that's going to be a good thing. Sometimes you say amaranthine and sometimes amaranthine. Do you have a preference?
For some reason, amaranthine feels natural to me, but I don't think is that how it would be pronounced?
Well, it has an E at the end. So
exactly.
Like thine, may thine heart be true, Mike Kelly.
Yeah, that's how I, yeah. So amaranthine. There's something about, I don't know why I feel conflicted about that. I should think about that.
You said both of them last week.
I know. I like amaranthine.
We'll go with that.
Okay.
All right, Mike Kelly, thanks for the PS.
Well, thank you, Lynn, for listening to me. Blessings on you.
All right, all for the best.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.